exciting.
Welcome back to another episode of PDGA Radio, this time coming to you from America's Playground, Las Vegas. It's Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen. Cool stuff.
I expected you to start singing Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah, you expected wrong.
You too tired as the traveling is getting to Grant already.
Already? one ride on an airplane and I'm already jet lagged and sleepy? No, that's not true.
Are you staying away from all the machines there?
Oh, I mean, you know, my wife's here with me. So we're playing a little bit. We're having some fun a little bit. It's Las Vegas is one of those places that for us, it's not our usual vacation type destination, you know?
Right. So have some fun.
So, yeah. So it's kind of that's kind of the theme of everything that we're sort of doing. And mostly we're just, let's be honest, we're walking around wide eyed like tourists. You know,
there you go.
We probably
nothing
have
wrong with
gigantic,
that. Everyone's done it one time.
I know.
Everyone has done that.
We
one.
Probably have. I had actually been to Vegas one time before. My brother and I were driving a guy's car for him to California. He had moved to California and decided he didn't want to ship his car. He just wanted to get a couple of
that's fun
goofballs that were willing to drive it out there. You know, by I think we drove nice. 1,500 miles or
yeah,
2,000 miles or
ways.
Some crazy amount of in like. You know, 36 hours.
Yeah.
So we made sure to drive through Las Vegas and we were in Las Vegas for all of about, I don't know, 15 hours.
That's all you need.
I know it kind of is. We just parked and then we wandered around, which is again, what I've been doing so far, but now shifting gears into the true lead up to the Las Vegas Challenge.
It's time for business.
Which is really interesting to experience a city like Las Vegas, but to experience the parts of the city that aren't as touristy.
Mm-hmm.
That's always interesting to me.
Henderson is fun. It's just on the border, but that's where we are going to be spending most of our time for the whole next week.
It just kind of reminds you that all the people you're encountering are real people that have real, regular, everyday lives, just like you do. And they... You know, they do things like eat at Applebee's.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like exactly.
So that's a fun transition. And speaking of that, we've got a guest today that we're going to launch. We're going to launch right into welcoming him into the studio because Scott Stokely is who it is, by the way. No sense in burying the lead. And he's transitioning himself in a certain way from being, I guess you could call him retired or semi-retired or something like that. Now coming back on tour and this sort of his debut event.
Right.
So lots and lots to talk about.
Back on tour as an MPO player, not in mm-hmm. a age protected division. So I am extremely excited. This is somebody I've been waiting to have on the show.
Scott Stokely in studio here at PDGA Radio. So you're going to be there for good grief. What is it? The ninth? You're going to be there a while.
Several weeks. One, two, he is three. Prepping and ready.
Almost three full weeks.
Yeah, I'm actually, we're here for just tonight and then we're heading into Death Valley for the next 5 or 6 days.
That sounds
so
mental
we'd like
prepping.
To go backcountry. I'm sorry, cutting you off. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say most people avoid pleasure stays in places with names like Death Valley.
Yeah. So here's the pleasure, though. So we like to go into the backcountry. So we like to camp whenever we can, but it's never like campgrounds. We like to disappear. And in Death Valley, there's like 2,000 miles of dirt roads. And you're like, we'll go somewhere where we're not going to see another person for like 4 or 5 days. And it's kind of both of our happy spots. So now once the tour starts, we only have 1 week camping trip planned all year up at the Boundary Waters. Other than that, it's going to be people every day, which is so it's okay for a while.
Bringing our listeners up to speed, we're with Scott Stokely joining us from Las Vegas, where he's already, I guess you're starting to start the prep work for the upcoming Las Vegas Challenge, but you're talking about taking a few days here and there to do some other things maybe before that preparation begins happening in earnest. And I realize in some respects, your preparation has been happening in earnest for quite some time now. When will you first be able to get on the course there in Las Vegas?
Well, to my understanding, the courses are available now. They're not all available. So there's some temp courses and one's available and not the other one, but you can play up until, and I think the week
before. Yeah, you have to get a tee time.
Yeah. And then the week before the tournament is when you actually, I think all the courses are open from Saturday on, or so I believe.
Correct. I believe Saturday and Sunday are both going to open up for us. And then the week of the event.
No. So I'll be out. I'll be back out of the, out of my camping trip with plenty of time to be playing the courses for sure. And I'll be practicing up in the desert as well.
Right on. So full disclosure to those listening, we're recording this chat with Scott a little bit in advance. We'll be airing this episode on the 22nd, I think is when the date scheduled for this episode to drop, this episode of PDGA Radio. But as we sit right now, we're about 2 weeks in advance of that because we've got so much going on in this build up to the first Disc Golf Pro Tour event of 2022. And during the early part of that week, both Jennifer and I will be traveling, and it's going to be just a really exciting time. So in order to make sure we've got a crackerjack episode for everyone to listen to, we asked Scott to step in right now. And we're just going to cover a lot of things, Scott. I know you're game for that because I've enjoyed listening to you talk about all things disc golf for many, many years now. So let's start at the beginning just briefly. I don't want to have you have to share things that you've already shared, you know, ad nauseum over the course of the years, and in particular over the course of the last few months as your sort of now well-known, I don't know if it's fair to call it a comeback, but you're sort of rejoining the touring world has been taking shape. So I don't want to make you rehash things you've already said a million times, but let's go ahead and briefly at least kind of go back to the beginning and just kind of bring us up to speed on, you know, your playing days early on, then a bit of a hiatus, and then now you are, you know, you're full speed ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't mind recapping. Every show has a different audience, except for those 8 people that listen to every show.
Right.
So the short of it is I played my first round of disc golf on the world's first Frisbee golf course when it was the only course in the entire world.
Wow.
So I actually was there at the beginning of the permanent golf courses. They played Frisbee golf tournaments before then, but at the beginning of the permanent course, I grew up, I played every single day. I dropped out of school in the 10th grade to play Frisbee all day. I always joke that parents ask me all the time, they say, what is the best advice you can give to help my kids' disc golf career? And I always answer, would you like me to answer you in front of your kids? And they always say yes. And then they need to drop out of school in the 10th grade and play Frisbee all day. Like, why are you asking me for parenting advice? But that was my path. And then I decided that I wanted to tour back before hardly anybody toured. I was actually the 7th player. So 6 people had done it before, but it was new. And I toured for years off and on through the 90s, took 13 years off. Had some great years as a sport in 2015 and basically have been in it since. And then last April, I decided that I was going to actually hit the tour. I was out doing my own thing, teaching, running classes, running clinics, doing special needs events, playing B and C tiers. But kind of I was outside of the bubble, and I decided I wanted to be in the bubble again, at least one more time.
So what shifted for you as of April in terms of just your daily life, your prep, your workouts, all of those things? How did things shift as of April?
Sure. So what basically happened was I was traveling on the country, doing seminars, disc golf seminars around the country, and then scheduling tournaments in between. So I would play a 1-day C tier. I would play an A tier, but I didn't care about the tournament. It was whatever was geographically near me. And I was going to be in Kansas. And so the Dynamic Discs Open was happening, which obviously is something that I always thought would be fun. But I went there because I was doing seminars in Kansas City and then Tulsa or something like that. But I went to the event, and I'd watched it on video some, but I just was astonished at what was like, where the sport had come. And to see it in person is, it's, I guess it's like any live event, whatever sport or activity you're talking about, seeing it live is not the same as YouTube. And it was like, it was basically what we had talked about and dreamed about 40 years ago. And I was watching it happen. I was just out at the country club and I was just mesmerized by what was happening. And the strangest thing happened. I really enjoyed myself. I got to see a lot of my friends. I'm friends with a lot of the touring players, you know, at least passively. And then they all got in their RVs and left. And I felt this feeling of abandonment. Like I felt like they're all leaving me behind and I'm supposed to be with them.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided that I wanted to go on tour, to go out and go on tour again. I was playing MP40, MP50. It, you know, it's wonderful. I wouldn't have to practice a whole lot. If you shoot 1,000 rated a tournament in MP50, you're probably going to win. No stress. You know, like it's just, it's totally different. Certainly that's not competitive at the highest level or, you know, even close.
Right. Yeah.
So I made the decision that I wanted to go out on tour. So the first thing I did was I asked myself if I could be competitive because I wasn't going to go out there to participate. You know, I'll say this till I'm blue in the face. If I or anybody enters a tournament without the intention to win, they're taking the spot from somebody who wants to go out and win. And I don't care if you're a 950 player, if you're going out there to win that tournament, you deserve the spot over anyone who's there to just to participate, in my opinion. That's why it's a tournament. Let me clarify. I'm not talking about participating in C tiers and B tiers, but I mean at the DGPT. That's what you need to be there to do. So I said, do I have a chance to win? Well, to date, no, obviously,
sure.
1,000 rate is not good enough. But what I looked at was the previous year, I had ended the season 1,010 rated, which I think was the second highest MP50 in the world at that time. And I felt like that's about where I was playing, but I wasn't practicing. That was zero practice. I hadn't practiced in like years, like literally around here or there. I was just showing up at tournaments. I was playing tournaments blind. So I'm asking where the holes are, how close is DOB on this hole, and just hoping that their estimate's right, and was still shooting 1,010. And so it seemed to me that that's only a couple strokes away from 1,025. And practicing and actually playing the courses in advance seems like there's three strokes to be picked up there fairly routinely
right.
by doing those things. Now, 1,025 isn't the highest level. But I have always believed that a 1,020 player is good enough to win any DGP tournament on a given weekend. Like, that's good enough to compete. And I said, well, if I get my rating up, if I could be playing 1,020-something golf, that means I would be good enough to win on a given weekend.
Sure.
I would be a I would be a huge betting underdog to do so, but I'm not there to participate. And that's when I said, I can do this. So the first thing I did is kind of a longer story, but the first thing I did is I said, okay, well, I need to start practicing and training. And I went out and I took 50 discs, and by the 30th throw, my arm hurt. And I was like, oh, that's right. I'm 52. I forgot. Oh, that's, you know, and then I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Like I already decided that I couldn't do this without putting the training in, and my body won't allow me to train. And I was in decent shape for 50, well, at the time, 51. I was in decent shape for 51, but not world-class athlete, competitive shape by any stretch. So I decided that I needed to, you know, like do the Rocky III thing and go back to the roots. And I needed to get my body younger.
Yeah.
And by younger, I mean just more fit, stronger, more flexible. And I played some tournaments, wasn't finding time to train. So I dropped out of all the tournaments for the rest of the year. And just started focusing first on my body. I stopped throwing and wanted to build a body that could sustain the training. I'm not sure having a better body is going to help me score better per se, maybe some, but the training will. And if I'm in shape, I can train. And that's what I did. And I spent months working on my body. And then when I went out to start training, my body doesn't hurt now.
Nice.
And oh my God, it was such a relief. So I'd already told everybody I was doing this thing, not knowing if I could. And I've been mind blown. It's incredible. but I'm able to train now and I feel great. So that's kind of a, I'm sorry, it's still very much a longer story, but that's kind of why I believe I've earned the right to compete with the best in the world. Like I've been putting the time in.
Yeah, when your body has the stability, it can go out there with so much less pain and, you know, preventing the injuries. So I love the track that you led up to this point.
Yeah, what my goal was is I wasn't going to have a 25-year-old body. I'm 52 years old. I wanted to have a late 30s athletic body, which is the last tail end of an athletic career. I mean, in some sports, late 20s is the end of the career. But in you know, sport like golf, late 30s kind of tends to be around that age. And I thought if I could just get to the tail end, like the final year of my athletic career, and I feel like I'm in my late 30s now, which is that was the goal.
Not only physically, but I know we've talked about a lot of the mental prep and the mental readiness to compete at the highest level. What else have you been doing mentally?
Yeah, it's funny because it's even though I've been doing this my whole life, this particular journey is unique. And a really interesting thing happened because I won't go down all the different rabbit holes of this, of stress and anxiety and how I've dealt with it. I've made videos about it. But the most interesting thing is that I've just now in the last couple of weeks started to get nervous. And I've never been, well, I can't say never. I probably was like 40 years ago, but like it's been a long time since I've been nervous competing at disc golf just because this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And this is me. So it isn't the nerves of playing. What I realized, the thing that was making me nervous was my entire, or sorry, the last 20 years, I should say, since I really stopped being competitive, I've always believed, hey, if I really put the time in, I could compete at the highest level. And you couldn't tell me otherwise because it's just theory. I believe if I put the time in, I can compete, but it's just not the priority in my life. I was raising my daughter. I'm teaching classes. I'm like that, you know, but I could if I tried. I always believed that. And I realized that now that I've done the training and done the work, I've had no injuries. I've had no, like nothing has gone wrong, knock on wood. Now this is going to be put to the test. So if I go out this year and I'm not competitive, and I don't mean every weekend or anything like that, but I mean, if I can't be competitive on a given weekend, I'll have to actually acknowledge that I can't be competitive if I put the work in. And that'll basically mean that I'm 52 years old.
But you will, no matter what, be able to compete in MP40, MP50, and everything else. But I believe truly that you're going to be able to get out there and give these MPO players a run.
I believe I can on a given weekend. I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. By the way, same goes for you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm going to tell you a true story, and I don't want to embarrass her, but I was talking to Adriana a couple days ago. And I was asking her who the breakout's going to be this year on the tour. And we're talking about Tatar and King and, you know, like not the regular names. I kid you not. She goes, Jennifer Allen's here.
I hope so. I, like you, I've been putting in more and more work. I haven't been able to completely devote every day. But I think our knowledge and our history of the game and everything else, you know, in life that we bring to this to the course, you know, is it helps us get to a different level. You know, I still get out there every day and I'm learning more and more. And we've played for, you know, 20, 30 years. So I think we do have a little bit more knowledge to bring. So I'm really excited.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that you have too is that you don't have the power drop off that is typical. Well, you may have a power drop off from 5 years ago, but you were starting at such a high level that mm-hmm. your power drop off is not an issue. So there's no physical limitations to your success. So
except for that soreness that we talked about of the age, no matter our strength that we bring to the table, you do. It feels a little different at 40 and I'm sure 50. So our recovery time, we definitely have to be smart about our recovery and to continuing to keep our flexibility and strength at the highest level.
So here's something I learned from Jim Brown, and I'm going to date myself, but they, you know, arguably the greatest football player of all time, certainly on everyone's list. And he was a running back. And what he said, I saw this in an interview once, is that whenever he got tackled, he always got up really slowly to walk back to the huddle. And the reason he did that was because if they actually rung his bell and they got him, he would get up really slowly, but you couldn't tell that they got him. Like, or they, nobody could tell that they actually really, you know, rocked him on that one. And I've taken that lesson. Like, I will never complain about like an injury on the course, because then I feel like everybody thinks they got something on me, right? So
that's interesting.
If I am sore from training, I'm probably not going to admit it.
I've got a cool question really for both of you. And we'll come back to maybe talking a little bit more specifically about the upcoming Las Vegas Challenge. But as the two of you, because Jennifer, we've already discussed this, how you're also touring with a lot more, you know, dates on your calendar and things like that for 2022. And as the both of you look at this year's slate of events, you know, Jennifer, your game is pretty well known. You're definitely a distance thrower in the FPO field. That's going to be a strength of your game relative to most of those that you compete with. Scott, your game is also pretty universally known. You were well known as one of the first players that could throw both backhand and forehand at an elite level, a truly elite level.
Distant record and level. Yeah,
distance holding record for both at the same time at one point. So as the two of you look at the slate of events coming up, are there certain ones that maybe because of the course makeup or something like that, you're thinking to yourself, I might have a really good advantage at that particular event or at that particular venue or whatever. Are you beginning to circle your calendars just a little bit for certain events? And if so, which ones do you feel like you're going to really be in a competitive mode for?
Go ahead, Scott.
Not really. I think there's a couple of courses that are so just about power that I'll be at a bit of a disadvantage there. I don't feel that that's a flaw with the course. It's my inability to throw as far as my competition. Mm-hmm. It's not Eagle and Gerthy's fault that they throw far. And so the fact that they have an advantage on those courses, they should. You should have every skill should give you an advantage somewhere if you have a skill that other people don't. So totally cool with those courses. But, any reasonable person is not going to seed me as high. Well, at least at the highest level. I mean, I'm still throwing I can comfortably throw 500 foot backhand and 500 foot sidearms with control. And I can get both of them into the 550, 570 range if I do the big flex shot. So I can still have a better than average power, but not Eagle girthy power, right? So I would say there's a couple of those that I think are going to be uphill battles. All the rest of them are on an even playing field, though. Like, I think they're all, I'm looking forward to all of them. I mean, world, first and foremost, Worlds, but that's because it's Worlds, mm-hmm. not the course. But yeah, everything but a few of those power courses, it's a level playing field.
Yeah, Worlds being in Emporia, we'll get a little double practice for that. But I am really excited for the Preserve. I've been told for many years that it is a course that will suit my distance. And it's just one that looks gorgeous. And I've always been excited and wanted to go and just never been able to make that trip. And so that's the probably the highest one on my list that I'm really looking forward to this year.
Yeah, but I do have one more to add to that's going to be special. So there's this big money skins match at Eagles Crossing.
Yes.
And it is the biggest skins match in the history of disc golf. And it's going to be much bigger than currently advertised. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I was asked to be one of the four people at the match, which was incredibly flattering to me. And looking at that course on video, my God, in fact, I've watched it enough on video, I can tell you every shot I'm throwing and what disc I'm using, and I've never even been there. I've watched that one enough. But that
looks like it's going to be amazing.
That's going to be a special event. So yeah, that's probably next to Worlds. That's probably my number two.
Scott, as you travel the country, what other things will you be working on between the actual events?
Oh my God. I'll be putting out content every single day. I'm going to be doing just tons of like behind the scenes, not really behind the scenes of the tour, but the tour through my eyes.
Okay.
One of the things that's happening, and this is all on purpose because I'm building my brand and my business. I have lots of products coming out. Some have already come out. But the thing that I'm going to be doing this entire year, or that I've been doing since April, is telling a story. And this is really one of the most overlooked things in sports marketing in general, is people are interested in stories.
True.
And so the story of me going from, like, I started by taking my shirt off on a scale and said, here's what we're starting with, everyone. Like, I wasn't proud of that, you know, but that's where a story begins. If the story begins not looking like that, it's not as interesting of a story. So the whole tour is going to be a story. I don't know the outcome. So the biggest thing off the course, aside from practicing the courses and all that, is going to be whatever story I'm telling of the good, the bad, the horrific, if necessary, hopefully not. but lots and lots of, I'm bringing everybody with me. So just lots of content.
Which, if our listeners don't know already, you are really good about telling stories and have published an amazing book already. So this will be your sequel to that.
Yep. It's the third book. The second book is my 13 years away from disc golf. The first draft is actually done, but that means it's like 18 months away from revisions. But it'll come out. No, actually, and I do have one more story I'm telling, because I've been doing something I love that's been a huge part of my life since 2015 is working within the special needs community. And at all the DTPT events, I'll be running a class for kids and adults with special needs. These are obviously free, like everyone's invited to come out to them and their families. I'll be running these classes at every single event. One of the things that I'm really proud of, it's so hard to talk about because it's not like I'm trying to like pat myself on the back, but at the same time, I'm very proud of it. And I do want to inspire other people to try to do positive things. And so one of the things that I do since last, since last April, every tournament I play, I give the tournament director the name of a special needs organization, and they send all my prize money to that organization. And that means I'm an amateur.
If you weren't going to say it, I was going to brag on you, because I've known that that's what you have done. And I can remember as far back as, you know, playing with you in Texas when you first dyed your hair blue.
Yeah.
He has always represented and supported autism for all the years.
You know, I remember those videos where your hair was blue. And I'll be honest, I thought you were just having a good time. You know, it's summertime.
Probably both.
And that might be part of it, sure. But I didn't know there was a more direct connection to why you did that. That's really interesting to know now.
Yeah. So part of it was because when I came back to the sport, I was coming back and doing it as a business. And I needed to, fundamentally, sponsorship or making money in the sport is about your ability to generate business for another business, unless it's your own business. You know, can I move the meter on a company? Well, can I increase sales of a disc manufacturer? If so, they can sponsor me and then I'm worth something. And I wasn't going to be setting world records or competing at the highest level. So I started off for a few years by saying, well, what can I do to stand out? Because I'm not going to win at the time NT tournaments. I said, well, I'm going to be crazy outrageous guy. And I'm going to be the funniest, wackiest person out there, which by the way is kind of how I am, but I made it, I turned up the volume on the public persona, and I had a lot of fun doing it and didn't make any money. From a business perspective, it was a failed business model, you try stuff, it doesn't work. But so the idea of doing the blue power and the blue hair, it kind of tied in with that, which was like, well, then why won't me and my partner at the time dye our hair blue and kind of keep that theme of being out there, you know, having fun, being crazy, but also trying to do the good stuff as well.
Nice. So you'll be doing, yeah. And as I said before, this episode will drop on Tuesday, February 22nd. So today, imagining it is Tuesday, February 22nd, today or tomorrow, have you got any of these clinics lined up?
Yeah. And actually, Jennifer has agreed to volunteer for one of them. It'll be on, I don't want to say the date because the date
okay.
is tentative. It's going to happen for sure, but we're still trying to coordinate the times. But basically, if you follow me, I'll be putting out plenty of announcements because it is going to be free for anybody that wants to come. So and it's families as well. So if you're a disc golfer out, you know, especially if you're in the Las Vegas area, if you have a sibling or a child or it doesn't matter, just someone close to you with special needs, bring them out to the event. Everybody's going to get a disc just for showing up. It's free, of course. And we have fun. And it started off as autism. That's the blue is the color of autism awareness. And that was the mm-hmm. blue power. But then very quickly it became just special needs because autism became like, well, what about someone with Down syndrome? Like they're not invited like that. Like mm-hmm. all of a sudden I'm like, that doesn't work.
Right.
So, but the autism kind of stuck because that's where it started. But it's adaptive disc golf because the thing about disc golf that's so special for the special needs community is you can adapt the game of disc golf for every individual that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 9-year-old with developmental disabilities can play a hole that's 40 feet long. And they throw a shot, they advance to that shot, they throw another shot, they advance towards this goal. There's a finale, there's a conclusion to what the goal is. You can quantify that with a number. That's golf.
Right.
Like that is fit as much the sport of golf as Jennifer and I play.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, just as real for the person playing it. So you can adapt this game for anybody. So when I do these classes, there's not a formula. I threw away the script. I've done 281 of these events in 201 cities.
Wow.
And I threw away the script after about the fourth because everyone was different and planning made no sense. So now the way the events work is here's the time we're showing up. And when you show up, let's see where everybody's at. Who do we have? Adults, we have kids, and then I make up the event as we go. It's impossible to do otherwise. So if you're in the community, if you're in the community, that doesn't matter who you are, bring them out. We'll adapt the game for them.
Yeah. And that's how, I mean, even in physical therapy, that's what we have to do. Every child or patient is different. And you have to look at what that patient needs. And so you're using that same theory with disc golf.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing at this, one of my ulterior motives / agendas at this season is that at every single event, I'm going to be bringing out 3 or 4 of the touring pros out to the events. My goal is to get everybody out to at least one. And I've done this before. I've brought many people out to volunteer and they'll ask me, we'll say, well, how can I work with this person? And my answer is, you're the professional. Why are you asking me?
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what they can do and adapt the game to them. You know, and everybody can. And like, once you realize that I don't need to be nervous about trying to teach this person, I just have to figure out where they're at. Everybody jumps in and like within a few minutes, everybody's having a great time. All the pros are having fun. And it's something I enjoy a lot.
It's definitely eye-opening, I'm sure, for everyone. And both the touring players who have never worked with anyone with any kind of special needs, as well as that child or adult, everyone's going to walk away with some kind of special moment and knowledge that they've learned that day.
No, for sure. And one of the funny things I've been asked, I mean, so many times over the last number of years, how can we get more pros to do charity work and do things like I do? And my answer is probably not the most popular answer, but my answer is I don't think they should. I think that as an athlete, as a professional athlete, you have a window. Like your entire career is built upon what you can accomplish in 10 or 15 years. There's outliers, of course, but generally it's a very small athletic window. I think the touring pros on tour should all be incredibly selfish right now. This is about trying to win worlds, trying to get titles, trying to build your brand, trying to build your career in the sport. And I don't think their attention should be, I mean, I'm not saying they, you know, donate a disc here or there, volunteer here or there, but I mean, their focus should be on them. This is the time of your life to be selfish. My goal isn't to convince people to be different than that. My goal is to plant a seed of like, hey, this is this really cool thing that I'm doing later in my life, because then hopefully down the road, when they're no longer trying to win worlds and trying to do these things, maybe they'll have some ideas of like how fun it was to do these things. But right now, like I fully support every professional athlete in the world being selfish when they're trying to be the best in the world at their sport. I truly do.
Especially now too, because we're trying to open up a much larger, huge scale audience to the sport, you know, so we want those top touring athletes to be at their very best and showing off all the skills of what our sport needs, you know, to grow mm-hmm. to where, you know, we can flip on ESPN and we're going to be able to watch disc golf. So I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not the most popular answer, because here I am telling people that they should be selfish, but that's my honest opinion.
That's a really interesting take. And it's one that I honestly haven't considered very much before, but I like the angle being that you're planting a seed now in one form or another, you know, that eventually will come full circle, hopefully, at least for some people. And that I think is key.
Yeah. And I mean, part of this is just because of my journey. Like if you asked me how much charity work I did in my 20s when I was touring, I didn't do any. And it's not that I was a bad person, but you know, or that I didn't care about the world. It's just that I cared far more about myself and, you know, my bubble of friends. But I accomplished things in an 8-year period that have given me an amazing life and will continue. Every day today, I make money off things I did in the 90s. And so I think that path is okay. And I don't think I would have been as successful had I not been selfish. So I don't want to be a hypocrite.
That's awesome. So now as we're preparing for the Las Vegas Challenge in particular, you've got some familiarity with the event. You've got some familiarity with the courses, the typical weather conditions, you know, all of those kinds of things. So as you're looking into what you're about to undertake here in the next couple of days, you know, what are your thoughts about the courses? Maybe some strategic ideas as you go into this. What can you take us through that right now?
Sure. So I've been watching a lot of game film, and there's an interesting thing that happens when you get better at disc golf. I'm going to go like big picture theory first, but I'll explain.
Please.
Because every tournament involves different types of preparation. Not every tournament, every course. Courses are different. Tournaments are tournaments. And one of the things that happens when you get good at disc golf, and Jennifer will fully relate to this, is you step up to a hole when you're new, and there's 14 trees on that hole. Well, you step onto that hole a year later, there's actually only 5, because 9 of those trees are no longer in play. Well, a couple years later, there's only 2 trees on that hole. And then you can get to a point where you step up to a hole and there's actually no trees on that course. When you play Vista del Camino, there's like 2 trees on the entire course. 16 of those holes don't have a tree for a competitive disc golfer. There's no obstacles. And Vegas looks a lot like that as far as the actual obstacles. It's not going to be about throwing around or through things. So that means that the emphasis has to be on gauging distance, because there's a lot of OB in play, which means this is a type of course that's going to be really important to get the feel of how far these shots are, because your perception isn't always right.
Right.
And so this type of course, when I'm playing it, it's really going to be about, okay, when I throw my felon sidearm, I need to, you know, make sure I get the Anheuser on it, because if I don't, it's landing OB. And it's going to be a lot more about feel. Whereas other courses, it's about lines. You go play a course in the woods, you're looking at, oh, I might miss this fairway, but I better miss it on the left side. Right side of the fairway missing is way worse than left side. You know, it's a whole different process. So this course is really going to be about feel, I believe, and hoping that I can get those distances dialed in. And it can get very windy out here.
That's true.
So,
and cold. We even had snow one year. The women did anyways.
Well, that's not, I don't tell me that. I'm an old. I got old man joints.
I'm hoping for nice sunny days. There's a huge warm front, I guess, right now. Okay. Or a heat wave. They're saying a heat wave on the West Coast in California right now. And so hopefully that will kind of trickle down to Las Vegas for us in a few weeks.
Well, I'm hoping. So, but that's it. So this is the type of course where I'm going to be more just trying to get the feel and just paying attention to the gauging the distance, because that one tree right off the fairway really isn't in play.
Interesting.
That's not the obstacle. The obstacle is the out of bounds.
I agree to that completely.
So
interesting. Okay. Wow. All right. I'm sitting here like mentally taking notes for my own strategy for some of my local courses, thinking to myself,
because I'm going to challenge him on a match. So he's trying to actually right now take notes how to beat me. Yeah. In our own challenge.
It's not going to happen unless I hide your bag right before we go to the course. Well, Scott, before we play a round of quick cues with you and then let you get out of here, I just want to let people know, you mentioned earlier, for example, these clinics, but they're going to have to follow you or know where to get information about where these clinics are, when they're going to be. So how can people find that kind of information about you and your touring out?
Yeah, so I do clinics and seminars. Seminars are my full day events. I'm actually sold out for the entire year on seminars. Mm-hmm. So there might be like one spot open, like in some October event, but they're sold out. But I will be announcing clinics throughout the year, and the clinics are a 90-minute open to everyone. I mean, I charge for them, but I mean, there's no cap to how many people come out. If you go to scottstokely.net and get on my mailing list, everything gets announced through there always. But I'm also, if you follow me on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, I'm not shy about marketing myself. So I'll be definitely announcing all of those things as well. And then as far as like, I have a lot of different sponsors, a lot of different tour series discs coming out. Two of them have been announced. A whole bunch of them haven't yet. But same thing, scottstokely.net is where you can get all those announcements.
Great. All right. Well, before we let you get out of here, we're going to play a quick round of quick cues with you. This is a lightning round style little, we'll call it a game. We're just going to give people that maybe don't know as much about you a chance to get to know some funny, interesting trivia about Scott Stokely. So we'll kick it off with this one. If you weren't a pro disc golfer, what would you be?
You know, what's really funny is I'd never gotten that question before, and then I got first time last week.
Wow.
And I was like stumped for the first time in my life. But you guys get the benefit of I've thought about this for the week. I live my life as a nomad. My Adriana and I, every single thing that we couldn't take with us, we gave away or threw away. We have no storage unit, no home base. Everything we own is in our car. And we will live that way the rest of our lives. So I don't know what I would do for a living, but it would be something where I didn't have to have a house and didn't have to live somewhere. It would be somehow traveling. Now, specifically what that is, it's not as important to me because it would be a means to an end. But something as an entrepreneur, and I would be living full time. Like our plan next year is based on what happens in the world, we're going to spend all of next year in Europe is the plan. And
all right,
the following year, my plan, I got this secret. Well, it's not going to be a secret for long, but my plan is I want to go to as many different national championships around the world as I can. But I'm totally down with Ethiopia and French Guyana. Like, I want to go to like the most obscure places where disc golf is new and play in their annual. So, but it's still nomadic. I just want to be on the road with Adriana.
Really, really interesting.
You could be a review, like a travel review guide.
Yeah, I thought about that. Actually, Adriana, what are you ranked on Google now? Google censors stuff for all of her reviews.
That's awesome.
They send her socks, but it's way better than being sent nothing. And it's
actually
something we can use. Like, that is their socks.
Yeah, That's awesome.
If we hit the age, we're getting socks as a gift is a good thing.
Christmas with grandma.
Yeah, that happens at age like 37 or something where socks are. Oh, cool. I need those.
I know. That's begun to happen to me as well. Scott, have you got a secret or maybe even a not so secret talent?
A secret or not so secret talent?
I was ready for this answer. I don't know. I feel like you're going to have a lot of great answers for these.
Yeah. Jennifer said you'd have several. No pressure.
Okay, I got a secret talent. I'm happy.
There you go.
And
ooh, that's an answer.
So, well, because I've had ups and downs in my life. In fact, I'm a firm believer, if you have not had some really bad years in your life, I don't know if you can truly appreciate the good years that follow. It's, you know, like I wouldn't take anything back just about the thing here or there, but I figured out how to be happy. And it my secret talent is that I figured out what makes me happy, and I'm following that path. And I've come to the conclusion that that's the biggest barrier to happiness, is when people want to live a certain way and they don't live that way. You know, like I love playing guitar, but I'm going to go do people's taxes for a living. Why am I not happy? And I think that goes, but that it's not just career. There's many different ways to have relationships. There's many different ways to have a home. But figuring out what makes you happy and then following that path kind of ends up happy. So
best advice we could ever have right there.
Yeah. And by the way, it only took me 49 years to figure that one out.
Probably quicker than most, honestly. There's people that sadly never figure that out.
Well,
that's true.
I actually did this. I took off. I've never traveled by myself before. All those years touring, I always traveled with a partner. I'm not an alone person. I don't like groups, but I don't like alone. And I actually took off by myself, and I did something that everyone had said to do for years, and I just kind of rolled my eyes. But I actually sat down and wrote down how I want my life to look, what I want to do, what I want my relationship to look like. I wrote it all down, and I said, I'm going to do this. And if I meet someone, they're going to fit into what I want, not because I'm the boss or something, but because I need to fit into what they want as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And my career is going to look the exact same way. And the traveling, and I actually put it all on paper and said, I'm not compromising.
Nice.
I'm gonna do things my way, and I've never been happier in my life. It's a trip.
Every answer just being one-upped by the next answer, I feel like, Jen. Okay, well, how about this one, Scott? When you travel, you've got if you're not in the driver's seat, so if you're in the passenger seat or on the plane, or maybe you're in the hotel room with nothing to do and a little time to kill. Favorite movies. That you always, you know, they're, as they say, they're remote drops. If it comes on and you happen to come across it, you're going to end up finishing that movie because it's a favorite. I'd love to hear favorite movies or maybe favorite books you're reading right now, for instance.
Yeah. So the favorite movie, is the original Willy Wonka.
Oh, wow. Okay.
By far, I'm going to make people not like me. But I'm one of those people where if they like have special effects in a movie or a famous actor, like I normally don't like it. I like those really cheap indie films. I like watching a movie that I know someone made for $12,000.
Interesting.
I'm one of those guys, and then I'm a snob about it.
How about books?
I know everyone hates that person. So it's like, oh, there's superheroes in that movie. Oh, that sounds awful. Except for Deadpool and The Dark Knight, but there's always exceptions. But it's all documentaries.
Okay.
I'm hours of documentaries. Every night before I go to bed, I listen to documentaries. A lot of history, a lot of philosophy, a lot of science. That's actually my largest learning interest. So movies are not as often.
Is your favorite book yours, or do you have another book that you love to read?
My favorite book of all time is The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein.
Okay.
It's a science fiction book written in the 60s that was, it won a bunch of awards at the time. So it's not, you know, it's not some hidden book. It won the Hugo Nebula Awards. But Heinlein was my favorite fictional author by a lot. I've read everything he's written.
Nice.
Interesting. But,
yeah.
Well, this might be hard for you to answer, but it also might be kind of fun. If someone were to make a Hollywood movie, or in your case, an indie movie on a budget about you, who would play you?
So I am actually trying really hard to get my book turned into a movie. That's something
that'd be amazing.
That's something that's really important to me. And I've already nailed down the first seed money investor for that. So I've thought about this a lot. Originally it was going to be Eagle McMahon.
You want Eagle to play you?
To play me.
And okay.
So the reason why this is something that's real important to me is that I want this to be the first big mainstream movie about disc golf, and it needs to do disc golf right. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing worse than being a competitive, like, let's say you're a competitive serious bowler, and then you look at the way Hollywood has portrayed bowling in movies, and like, it's incredibly unfair. And I wouldn't do a movie that did that. In order for that to happen, you need disc golfers playing the parts, because everyone who plays disc golf knows if you see someone not playing disc golf who's like passed as the pro,
right,
like it's going to rub every single disc golfer the wrong way. So yeah, it has to be disc golfers who can act, not actors who learn to play disc golf.
Love that.
All and right. So, you know, like Mason Ford is going to play Sam Farren's. I've already thought these things out. My daughter has already made me promise that she's going to get to play her mom in the movie.
Nice.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Here's what we need to do, Jen. We need to find someone with the Screen Actors Guild, and we need to get some kind of spreadsheet with every member. And then we take PDGA membership, we put them side by side, and we do a search and see if there are any common names.
There we go.
Between the two. And then when we get that search done, we'll ship it off to Scott so that then he has his whole, you know, what do they call that? That's not the cast list, because the cast is who's been selected.
Call,
but
the call, right?
You have your call list. There you go. And you can you can audition all of those people.
There's some actors or people in Hollywood who play disc golf. So the nice thing about this modern world we live in is that you don't need Hollywood to have a successful movie. Mm-hmm. Just audition doesn't need a major label. Like the true indie film, not the, you know, actually secretly sponsored by a major studio indie film, but like a true indie film can actually make it. There's so many different platforms to release it. There's so many different ways to monetize it, that there's so many more options now. I have the seed money has been agreed to, but it's going to take more than that. So it's going to take more investors. But I've been seeking the people to help me get this done, because I think it's going to be fantastic. And it's a great story, because it's, you know, it's the history of disc golf, but it's also a story that is interesting. Yeah, I think it works. So, by the way, I didn't mention this earlier. I'm going to play Dan Roddick.
And you're going to play Stork. Okay. I got it.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Stork is one of my closest, dearest friends my entire life. He's been a mentor of mine. I grew up, you know, in his town. And I already told him that I'm playing him.
Great. So
he's cool with it.
Well, after we're done, I'm going to Google how to get your Screen Actors Guild Award. And then I'm just going to send whatever comes up to Eagle. And that's what we'll do. Scout.
Well, the problem is Eagle's kind of aged out. So this is my, even just a few years ago, like Eagle's aged out of this. So he's not going to be able to.
Oh, no.
So that would, well, because most of the book takes place teenagers through 20. So it has to be someone like that can kind of pull off both. It's going to be.
There's so much young talent coming up. I'm sure there'll be a few more guys that might be able to fill the part.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, Mason Ford gets to play Sam Farren's, because Mason Ford is going to look young forever.
That's true. That's true.
But yeah, but he's like a slam dunk. I've already cast him I haven't told him. I guess maybe he'll hear now that he's already been cast in my movie in one of the most important roles. But yeah, he's in the movie.
Hilarious. Scott, what's your favorite meal on the road?
Oh, my favorite meal on the road is anything that's not a chain restaurant. I like, cool. I like supporting local businesses. We do just local ethnic restaurants is pretty much every night. Always local, always hole in the wall. Not always, I shouldn't say always, but often.
Do you have a particular meal that is sort of a, well, we can go two ways with this. It can be a pre-tournament meal. You know, this is what I like to eat the night before, you know, it's go time. Or maybe you've got that reward meal that is, it's reserved for the end of the tournament, or maybe even it's reserved for only a big, you know, high finish.
After he just won his first Disc Golf Pro Tour event.
Yeah, yeah, I have a reward meal scheduled for October. I'm zero. Well, it's not like the keto diet, but I'm zero bread, zero rice, zero tortillas, zero pasta, and zero refined sugar. And I'm being diligent about this because I don't think at 52 years old I can be pretty good about it. So I'm way more diligent. Like if I was 25 and I was on a very, you know, nutritious, healthy diet, I could still probably get away with ice cream once in a while because I'm 25, but I'm not. So part of this actually has to do with the mental game, is that mentally I need to feel like I've done everything I could. I don't want to look back at the last week and say, wow, I did pretty good that week. I shouldn't have skipped that workout on Monday, or I shouldn't have had that. Like, that's mentally not the state for me to be in. I need to be able to look back and be like, I was perfect this week. So my meals are all healthy.
Nice.
And I'll be eating, like I'll be binging. I'm going to put on 20 pounds of ice cream weight in November. Like I have every intention of like eating nothing but ice cream for a month, but until then, no celebration.
So what's your favorite ice cream?
Oh God. I eat chocolate every time, but we don't go to chains. We don't so before I went on tour, like we went to ice cream was every night. Like that was part of it in town, local restaurant, local ice cream, always local. And so I'm always doing the chocolate, but it is different everywhere if it's not a chain. So.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't get where you are without being goal oriented. So having a goal of, you know, an all ice cream November. I don't know, Jennifer. I don't know if I've ever heard a more, you know, athletically elite goal in my entire life.
Well, the thing is, I've worked so hard, I probably won't like fall off the wagon too hard with it because, this is one of the weirdest things, and I say this with all the humility in the world. Like, I don't ever remember in my life walking in front of a mirror going, damn, dude, you look pretty good. Like I was very thin when I was younger, which made me very insecure. When I tried to work out, I stayed thin, and nothing ever worked. And so like, this is literally this is God's honest truth. This is the first time in my entire life I've actually like looked at myself and been like, dang, dude, you look really, really good. And now I'm like, I don't want to lose that feeling. Right. Mm-hmm. I know. Sounds silly, you know, but I'm like, I like the feeling of liking myself. I didn't love how I looked before. Like now I'm like, geez, not too bad.
I think that's the addiction to working out. You know, you have to be motivated to get to that point, and it takes a while to get to that level. But then once you get there, that's the motivation that helps keep you there.
Yeah, I don't want to lose it. Like I used to joke that. That way, like at 52 years old, every single compliment you get needs to end with "for your age." And if you think about it, that's actually the truth. Man, you really throw far.
For your age.
Right? You really look good. Wow, you parked really well. For your age. You know? I'll tell you what, like, wow, you know how to use your iPhone pretty well.
For your age.
Yeah, and so like I'm literally like at the first point in my life where I'm like, no, actually I think I just actually looked good. Period. Like, I mean, and again, all the humility in the world. I got 51 years of not feeling this way. So I'm like, I've earned it. I've earned a year of this.
You deserve it, Scott. Well, thanks again so much for coming on. You were a great guest for your age. And we... we appreciate it so very much. We can't wait to watch you this week at the Las Vegas Challenge, and maybe even more so just as the season unfolds, because like you said already, it's going to be a story. Whatever happens, it's going to be a fascinating story. I think it's going to be a really good story, regardless of how each individual tournament ends. But I have a feeling we're going to see you make some noise as well. And that's going to be just, you know, for a guy like you who loves Rocky movies, which were independent, at least originally, it's great to see that kind of competition out there, the kind of competition that you're going to bring to the existing field. And I just can't wait to see you make some noise. So we'll be on the lookout.
I appreciate that. I am excited as well. I have so much respect and so much admiration for the athletes on the pro tour. The MPO and FPO are just at a level that is like would have almost been obscene 10 years ago. And I have so much respect for them. And then the minute I tee off, I don't. At the minute I tee off, they are the competition. I'm there to beat them. And then when the round's over, I'll go ahead and, I'll respect everybody again. But when I'm competing to win. I will always do that. If the day that I'm not trying to win the tournament, like I said, I'll step aside and let someone else take that spot. I won't take the spot from someone else who wants to win, ever.
That's awesome. All right, Scott. Best of luck. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Sort of an obvious news element from this past week from the PDGA, the new and improved world rankings. Or maybe I should say the return of the world rankings. Jennifer, as you know, there hasn't been an update to the world rankings essentially since before the pandemic hit. And the reason why is pretty logical when you think about it. With the pandemic, the ability for players like yourself, Jen, and everybody else to truly compete on a global scale, on a worldwide scale, was pretty much nixed entirely.
Right, especially that first year.
Yeah, for the entire season, other than the first couple of events of 2020, there wasn't a tour at all anywhere. And then toward the end of that year, in the United States at least, we managed to get some events in. But our European friends weren't able to come and participate in any of those events. And then in 2021... the U.S. tour, meaning the U.S.-based majors and the Elite Series events, which in 2021 included both Disc Golf Pro Tour and
National Tour,
the former National Tour, right? Those events were able to have a basically full schedule, but in Europe, they were still dealing with travel restrictions.
Right.
Even just country to country within Europe, that wasn't happening for the bulk of 2021 in many European countries. So, again, it wouldn't be right to say this is the world ranking when the world's players aren't able to face each other, like face to face in the same events. Right. Yeah. So we chose to not update the world rankings here at the PDGA for a while, but we did use the time wisely and began to work with the formula that it takes to create a world ranking. And you got to see that last Thursday. It was released on the PDGA.com website. I got to be a big part of working on the release of that information. And so I got to know it inside and out. And the bottom line is the emphasis was on making the formula as easy as it can possibly be while still factoring in those, you know, statistical anomalies and stuff. Right. But we wanted it to be something that you can pretty easily talk about.
Right.
So if you go to the website and look at it, you can see majors are a pretty big emphasis, which is something that we've continually heard from the pros. You know, your performance at the premier events.
That's what matters.
Is part and parcel of how good you are, right?
Absolutely.
Then we went into all of the Elite Series events, which now comprise essentially the Disc Golf Pro Tour in the United States. And we basically average out a player's finishes in those events. And there's a minimum and a maximum number of those events that go into the average, which basically means you may have the opportunity to drop some poor finishes from the average, which is good.
Yeah.
Right. If you have an off week, that won't necessarily count against you. And then we looked at wins, podiums, and top tens, which was another input directly from, in particular, the Pro Touring Players Committee here at the PDGA, which is chaired by Paul Ulibarri, by the way. You know, that was another one of those things where the pros said, hey, consistency is good. And consistency, especially at the top, is really good. So wins, top threes, top tens, you know, those should almost be sort of a bonus because that's really what you're going for. And there's something to be said for the competitive nature. And Jen, you can speak to this. When you're standing on the final hole of a tournament and you know, if I birdie, I get a top five. And if I bogey, I, you know, drop a couple of spots. Well, the competitive nature in you is going, I'm going to go for the birdie. And if I don't get it, I'm going to live with the result, but I'm going to always go for my best.
Absolutely.
Right. So yeah, we wanted to reflect that in the rankings. And so the rankings came out, and for the most part, I think they're pretty true. I know that there are a couple of players here and there that you're like, that player is one spot or two spots below that player, and it feels like it should be the opposite. And I'm not going to say there's not an argument to be made there, but I am going to say you can see the data that was actually used. And I think what makes the rankings so strong is you can see how easily that data is going to change by the time the next update comes along.
Right. And players knowing what is important now, like you said, might motivate us to be like, if this really matters to you where you're ranked, then, you know, finishing top 10 and really striving for those points might be a little more important now that players know.
Yeah. So let's talk about two elephants in the room real quick by way of example. Okay. So Calvin Heimberg in the MPO rankings. And by the way, let me go ahead and back up and say one thing. The rankings are based on the location of the tour, meaning the rankings right now that are out, we are calling them the US Tour rankings. That doesn't have anything to do with the player's nationality. It has to do with where the tour is happening. Because after all, Jen, we are still having the remnants of travel restrictions with
with pretty COVID. Soon a lot more players are about to be here. So that will change.
So when the European tour gets kind of cranking, we'll do a European ranking. And then when everybody's cranking together, we'll blend the two, hopefully in the not too distant future. But this is a first step. So anyway, back to this, the US tour rankings. Calvin Heimberg comes out in this initial ranking, which is based on data from last season, mostly. He comes out and he's eighth. Ahead of him are players like Adam Hammes, James Conrad, Kyle Klein, Chris Dickerson. These are all players that are ahead of Calvin Heimberg. And some look at that and they say, you know, it feels like Calvin is a few spots low. Not to take anything away from those other players I just mentioned.
Right. All those players are amazing.
And the point is, they're all very neck and neck. We're talking about we're talking about fractions of a point here. But the bottom line is, when you look at the data, you see that last year, Calvin's performance at USDGC was a little lower than his sort of expected performance. Calvin's performance at Worlds was pretty good, just outside the top 10, though. And when you look at it in comparison to some of those other players, again, based on this window of time, it makes a little more sense why, for this particular ratings update, Calvin might find himself eighth. Now, at the next ratings update, we get a few more events under our belt. Calvin might be fourth, and, you know, everyone will shuffle around just a little bit. So, you know, you can look at it and go, wow, that player feels a little higher, a little low, but you can see easily why, given the window of opportunity that the rankings covers. Now, on the women's side, and, you know, Jennifer, you came in on the women's side, I think, are you 23rd?
It's down there.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. It was low.
Now, in your case, that's part and parcel of the fact that last year you played a number of events off of the Disc Golf Pro Tour and the National Tour. You played a lot of Masters events. You played Masters majors.
It was a mixture. Yeah, I probably played the most majors I've ever played, but most of those were Master Majors. And, so I did still play Worlds.
Right.
I did play U.S. Women's for the first time ever, but that was in the Masters division. Mm-hmm. So I played, but I did not play as many ATERs as usual because I'm still working with healthcare.
Right. And this doesn't even take into account ATERs. This only takes into account those Elite Series events, which you only played.
Right. Well, sorry.
You only played two of last year. So you got a ranking. You played in enough events to get a ranking, but you played a considerably fewer number of events than a lot of the players that for the moment are ranked above you, but that's obviously going to change very, very quickly.
I hope so.
Don't we all? Hey. But, you know, one of the elephants in the room on the women's side is Kristen Tatar, who is fifth. But let's not forget that in her case, similar to you, due to COVID travel restrictions, she only played four events.
Which she did amazing.
But she only played in four. Now, in contrast, Katrina Allen played in 17 plus the two majors.
That's unreal.
So that helps it make a little bit more sense why Kristen is fifth. But you're thinking, but I think Kristen might be a little bit better than that. She might be really, you know, shoulder to shoulder with some of these that are some of these women that are ranked above her. Well, the fact of the matter, she is. And when she gets a chance to play more events and we can compare apples to apples, we might see if that bears out. So it all kind of makes sense once you take the time to look at it. But we're very, very excited at the PDGA with these rankings. We're really excited to bring them out in this sort of phased approach with a tour-based approach, the U.S. Tour and soon the European Tour. And we can't wait until we get the opportunity to blend them back together and have that true world ranking. And it's going to roll, you know, with a window of opportunity of about a year. It's that window is going to constantly roll, and those old events are going to drop off, and those newer events are going to take their place in the scoring. And so we're going to be able to be pretty accurate about who really is both consistent, but also most recently playing at the top of their game. So we're very, very excited about this. And I would love to see any questions or any comments about the rankings. I'd love to see those pop up on our Twitter feed, for example, PDGA Radio on Twitter. You can use that, make a comment, and maybe we'll be able to address it here before the season gets going too much. We can kind of address the calculations, and then we can all sit here together and watch things pan out as the season starts, right?
Absolutely.
So Jennifer, you in particular, as this Las Vegas Challenge gets going, you're going to have some opportunities early on to really bolster your average, because right now you're only averaging a couple of events and you've got a whole lot of room to just add events to your tally. So sky's the limit for you.
Hopefully I'll do some shuffling, right?
Let's get it done, right?
We want to thank Scott so much for joining us here on PDGA Radio, and we are going to go live it up in Las Vegas for the rest of the week and catch you next week when we can discuss all the amazing results, and you might be joining me in my studio down in Arizona, so that'll be fun.
That's going to be a lot of fun. We get to record from the same location. How cool will that be? All right, PDGA Radio, out.
Bye.